The Monthly Coach. Extraordinary leadership.
Hi, this is Robin Sharma, and welcome to Extraordinary Leadership, 5 Best Practices to Lead the Field. One of our clients is Nike, and they have their mission statement as well as their values in kind of a playbook that they call the Maxims. And as one of their core organizing principles, Nike states that they are focused on helping the athletes of the world get better. And then there's a little asterisk at the bottom of that page that explains everyone's an athlete. In other words, their purpose is to help every human being become a better athlete. And that philosophy goes all the way back to the founder, Bill Bowerman, who was a track and field coach who came up with the waffle sole on the first set of those Nike sneakers by using a waffle iron. Well, this program is all about leadership, and in particular, helping you become a better leader. And I want to borrow from the Nike philosophy and simply say that if you consume oxygen, you are a leader. Just like Nike believes that everyone who's walking the planet today is an athlete, I believe that no matter where you work, no matter what you do, no matter what your title is, no matter where your office lies, you are a leader. And that idea is really what separates the best organizations from the mediocre organizations. The truly world-class organizations understand that to lead the field and to get ahead of the competition, they need to grow leaders throughout the organization more quickly than the others in their market space. In this audio learning program, I'm going to give you some of the best ideas that I've learned and some of the most powerful tools for leadership, elite performance, and taking your career as well as your life to its highest level. I want to start off by saying, first of all, thank you so much for the gift of your time. It truly is a privilege for me to share my message here with you today. The second thing I want to start off with, and you've probably heard me say this before if you've listened to my other CDs or been to any of my workshops, I'm not a guru. I'm an ordinary man who grew up in a town of about 2,000 people on the east coast of Canada. I'm in no way perfect. In many ways, I see myself as a work in progress. I have my own struggles, I have my own fears, and I have my own challenges. You may not know this, but a number of years ago, I was actually very afraid of public speaking. Now I spend so much of my time public speaking, but I remember when I was in university, I was so afraid to get up on my feet and share my words. As a matter of fact, I structured my entire law school curriculum in such a way that I wouldn't have to give a presentation in front of my peers. All of my work was written work. And I know that I'm not alone. They say that the number one fear of a human being is public speaking, the number two fear of a human being is death, and the third fear, you know it, dying while you're public speaking. And I really do come from humble beginnings. My parents came to this great country as immigrants, and I certainly didn't grow up with a silver spoon in my mouth. Now I get to speak to large audiences and share my leadership message with leading companies around the world, but only 23 people came to my first presentation. And I got to tell you, 21 of those people were my family members. The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, which has now been published in over 50 countries and is topping bestseller lists, started off as a self-published book. I actually self-published it in a Kinko's copy shop. I stored the first 2,000 copies in my kitchen in boxes. I used to sell them out of the back of my car and with my father at optimist clubs and at rotary clubs and other service clubs. And I guess that's a testament that every dream starts off small. So often we see people and we put them up on a pedestal and we say, well, we could never get there. Or we're running an organization or leading a team and say, well, I could never get to world class. What we often forget is that every person that we admire, whether it's a Nelson Mandela or a Mahatma Gandhi or a Mother Teresa or a Richard Branson or a Bill Gates or a Steve Jobs or a Meg Whitman or a Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon.com, they started from very humble beginnings. But each day they used as a platform for improvement and getting to their form of greatness. Last week I had the joy of seeing U2 perform live, a truly world-class performance. And there they were in front of 25,000 people, like four gods on the stage, touching people at the deepest level, making us smile, truly delighting us with their music as well as their show. And yet it's so easy to forget that U2, one of the world's most famous rock bands, started off as unknowns in a small club in front of a small group of people. But each day they nurtured their dream. Each day they got better. Eventually, their dream came true. So I truly am not a guru. And if at any time during our time together on this program, I come across as someone who's shouting wisdom from the mountaintop, please forgive me because that's definitely not my intention at all. But I do want to share with you that I have real-world experience in the trenches, out in the field, with real people who are dealing with the kinds of leadership challenges that you're dealing with today, maybe this very hour. As an executive coach and as a success coach, I've had the privilege of working with 2 billionaires, including one of Asia's top industrialists. I've worked with sports stars. I've worked with leading entertainers. I've worked with wildly successful entrepreneurs. I've run workshops around the world, such as the Elite Performer Series, which is our two-day leadership transformation process, where I help employees think, feel, and act like leaders so they can go back to their organizations and help the enterprise get to world-class. And companies like Ritz-Carlton, Oracle, MetLife, and Motorola have put their executives through the Elite Performer Series. We have another program called Grow the Leader, which is our Train the Trainer program, where we teach employees within organizations the 8 rituals of visionary leaders from my book, Leadership Wisdom from the Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, and they in turn teach the rest of the organization those tools. Organizations like NASA and pharmaceutical giant Wyeth are clients of ours who are currently going through the Grow the Leader program. And as the CEO of Sharma Leadership International, a training and coaching firm, I personally understand the challenges that you face as a leader of people, as a business person, as a human being trying to balance work and family, and live in this confusing and complex world that we live in today. And I share this to simply say what you are about to learn comes from my firsthand experience with the clients I've mentioned, along with the experiences and the interactions I've had working with our other clients, including Microsoft, FedEx, Nike, General Motors, IBM, and the Young Presidents Organization. I don't share this in any way to impress you, but simply to impress upon you that what you are about to hear is practical, powerful, and it works. A lot of times people will come up to me after a presentation I've given or after a workshop and they'll say, Robin, you know, does this really work? Some of the things you share are different from the way we do things within our organization. Well, I got to tell you, I think part of my job here today with you is to be a professional disturber. And what I mean by that is part of my job here today with you, as well as when I work with other organizations, is to shake people up a little bit and to pull them out of their safe harbor of the known and to inspire them as well as challenge them to begin to see things through a new set of lenses with a new set of eyes. You know, a lot of us cling to the safe harbor of the known. We stay within this security zone and we stay in there because we think that's the safest place to be. So we do things in the same way. We treat people at work in the same way. We think the same kinds of thoughts. We engage in the same kinds of behaviors. And why do we do that? Why do we resist change so much? Why do we resist the new? We do that because we're afraid to try new things. We do that because we're afraid to stretch. We do that because we're afraid to move towards our resistances. Even though at a deep level, we know that if we move towards the change, we would grow as human beings. Now, here's the big idea. There's no safety in the comfort zone. There's no safety in the safe harbor of the known. The most secure place to be in this new world of business we live in is actually in the unknown, trying new things, stretching, innovating, exploring, pushing your personal frontiers. You know, a boat that stays in the safe harbor never gets banged up. It never experiences rough seas. But that's not what boats were made for. And similarly, a human being that stays in the safe harbor of the known will not struggle as much. There won't be as much stress. There won't be as much challenge. But that's not what human beings were made for. As a matter of fact, the latest science is showing that the human brain craves novelty. We're actually happiest when we are growing. We're actually happiest when we're challenging ourselves. So if you want to be happier as a human being, it pays to embrace change. It pays to run towards your resistances. It actually pays to visit the places that scare you, not only as a business person, but as a human being. The starting point of any conversation about leadership begins with the conversation of children. The greatest examples of leadership on the planet today are children. When you really think about it, children come to us more highly evolved than adults to teach us the lessons we need to learn. And children are ideal examples of the kinds of traits that great leaders have. Children are curious. Children love to learn. Children don't resist change. They embrace change. Children are passionate. Children are loving. Children understand the importance of building relationships and putting people first. If you put 5 little children in a park together and leave for 5 minutes, you'd come back and you'd see your child say, Mommy or Daddy, I want you to meet my 4 new best friends. Children connect so easily. They don't judge. If you were to leave 5 adults together in an elevator and come back after 10 minutes, not one of them would be connected. Not one of them would be in conversation. Not one of them would be relating to each other. They'd be checking their Blackberries. They'd be looking up at the numbers. They'd be standing in silence. My challenge to you after you listen to this audio learning program today is find the nearest elevator, make sure there's people inside it, get in the elevator, and give the person next to you a big hug. I'm joking, but the point really is children are wonderful teachers. One psychologist has written, adults are nothing more than deteriorated children. And that's such a big idea. What is it that we've lost as human beings? As we've left the innocence and perfection of childhood and journeyed into adulthood. And the bigger question is, how can we get those traits of greatness back? One of my favorite questions that I ask my one-on-one coaching clients is this one. What would the child you once were think of the adult that you've become? Another great question related to this idea that children are great examples of leadership is how old would you be if you did not know how old you were? I don't know if you're a parent, but I'm a father, and my absolute number one priority in my life is my children. Nothing is more important to me than my two children. I can speak to thousands of people. I can go on tours to exotic places. I can work with top executives. I can write books that get to the top of bestseller lists. But what fills my heart with the greatest fulfillment is going to my children's parent-teacher night and hearing from their teachers, Colby and Bianca are good kids, and they're smart kids, and they're caring kids, and they're responsible kids, and that they're a joy to have in the class. My daughter Bianca is 9 years old. The other day I was driving her to school, and I was watching her from the rearview mirror, and I noticed she was looking at my head. I knew something great was going to come. She looks at me and she says, "Daddy, I like your bald head. Did you know it makes you look like a wrestler?" Put a big smile on my face. A little while ago, I also asked her, "Bianca, what is it that you want to be when you grow up?" And she goes, "Daddy, I want to be a dentist and a dollar store owner." And my son Colby's 11 years old, and he's a real work of art. He's going through a stage where he loves money. He wants to be an investment banker when he grows up, as well as run an oil company. So we had some dear friends who were coming to visit us, and they called me in advance. They said, "Robin, we want to bring some gifts for the kids that will truly delight them. We want to bring some very special gifts for them. What can we bring them?" And I said, "Well, I don't know, but let me put Colby on the phone, and you can ask him yourself." So Colby gets on the phone. He says hello. And they say, "Colby, we want to bring a great gift for you. What is it that we can bring that would really make you happy? What is it that you really need?" Colby, without missing a beat, replies, "Cash would be fine." And on the point of leadership, about 2 years ago, I sat Colby down and I said, "Colby, what's a leader?" I wanted to see what a young child viewed a leader to be. And Colby looks at me and he said, "Daddy, when we're in school, my teacher makes us stand in a single file line. And Dad, my teacher told me that the person who's at the front of the line is a leader." And I said, "Son, that's interesting." And he said, "Dad, here's the thing. As the days and the weeks of the month go by, everyone in our class gets their chance at the front of the line." He said, "Dad, as the month goes by, every single person in our class gets their chance to be a leader. And that way, each of us learns how to do it." And that little boy hit the nail on the head, because in this new economy where everyone needs to think, feel, and act like a leader throughout the organization, no matter what your title is, the best of the best will understand that they need to become leaders. Which brings me to the first of the five best practices I want to share with you for extraordinary leadership. And that is, leadership begins with you. In my leadership presentations to organizations, one of the stories I love to share is the story of Osceola McCarty. Osceola McCarty was 91 years old at the time she passed away. She spent her life washing other people's dirty laundry. This woman grew up in wretched poverty, absolute adversity. She faced one tragedy after another tragedy over the course of her lifetime. The first 87 years of her life, she never left her home except to walk up her street to buy groceries and to visit her church. She never learned how to drive. She never got married. Although when she was 87, she did say to her best friend that she was still looking for a good man. And yet by the time this woman passed away at the age of 91, she'd been honored by world leaders. She'd met with prime ministers and presidents. She'd even received an honorary doctorate from Harvard University. So you might be asking, who was this woman? Why would she receive such acclaim? Well, here's her story. Ever since she was a young woman washing other people's dirty laundry, she would take the nickels and the dimes and the quarters that she would make every day, and she'd walk up to her local bank, and she'd make these daily, seemingly insignificant deposits. Just like you in your work and in your personal life with your family or in your community might be doing these things and making these small contributions that you don't think amount to much. And yet here's the big idea. Our lives are defined by those small daily acts of greatness. What is a great life? It's nothing more than a series of well-lived days strung together like a necklace of pearls. It's the things that you are doing today, those small choices, those small improvements, those small acts of kindness that are actually creating your future and defining your destiny. And so this woman, perhaps just like you, would make those small, daily, seemingly insignificant contributions. And this went on day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, until the decade slipped away. So one day she's 87, and she walks into her bank, and the man behind the counter looks at her, and he smiles, and he says, "Osceola, how are you today?" And she says, "Fine, how are you?" And he says, "I'm fine." And then he asks, "Osceola, do you have any idea how much money you have accumulated as a result of these small daily contributions that you've been making over the years so consistently?" And she said, "No, why don't you tell me?" And he said, Osceola, you have accumulated $250,000. What do you want me to do with it? Well, you know, she was a simple woman. She didn't know how much money that was. So here's what the man behind the counter did. He took out 10 coins and he put them on the counter across from where she was standing. And he said, Osceola, these 10 coins represent your money. Please tell me what you'd like me to do with it. Well, she pointed to the first coin and she said, I'd like you to give that to the church. And then she pointed to the next 3 coins and she said, I'd like you to give these to my nieces and my nephews and my cousins because I love them so much. And then a smile came to her face and she said, as for the remaining 6 coins, I have something very special in mind. 1 month later, a local university in Osceola McCarthy's hometown received a check from her for $150,000 with a handwritten note attached to it that simply said, I would like you to set up a scholarship for poor African-American students who still know how to dream, who want to be great, who want to be leaders. And that act of humanity touched people around the world. Ted Turner was so impressed, he said, if an elderly washerwoman could give away all her money, I can certainly give away $1 billion. And that's exactly what he did. And Osceola was asked, what is it that you truly want out of your life? And she said, you know, I just want to keep on showing leadership through the small things that I do each day. I want to live by principles. I want to keep doing my best. But she said, you know, I do have a dream, and my dream is this. I so dearly wish that I could see the first recipient of my scholarship grace the graduation stage before I pass away. She said, that's really my dream. And yet she said, I know that's probably not going to happen because of my advanced age. And yet, 1 month before she died, the first recipient of her scholarship did walk across the graduation platform. And after she died, an energetic reporter tracked down the student and said, did you hear the news? Osceola has passed away. Your benefactor has gone. Do you have any comment? And that student said, yes, I do have a comment. Yes, there is something I'd like to say. Heaven couldn't have gotten a better angel. She was an inspiration, she was a blessing, and she was a treasure to the entire earth. That's what leadership is all about, standing for something higher. It's not about title. It's not about being the CEO. It's not about having a corner office. Leadership, not only in business, but as a human being, is about doing your part, taking personal responsibility, understanding that everyone is a leader. If you breathe oxygen, you have a responsibility to be a leader, to make a difference, to stand for something higher, to develop other human beings. Mother Teresa said it so well. She said, if everyone would only clean their own doorstep, the whole world would be clean. Another way to phrase it is, we can curse the darkness every day. We can blame the boss. We can blame the competition. We can blame the economy. We can blame our parents. We can blame our backgrounds. Or we can reach deep within ourselves and understand that no matter who we are and what we do, we have the power to make better choices. We have the power to make a difference. We have the power to make an impact. Blaming others is nothing more than excusing yourself. In a lot of my presentations, I'll ask the whole audience to point their index finger at me. And I'll say, how many fingers are pointing back at you? And they start to smile and they say, you're right, there's 3. In other words, every time you point the finger at someone else or at a circumstance for what's not working in your life, there's 3 fingers pointing back at you. I recently read a fascinating article in an issue of Vanity Fair about Jennifer Aniston, the former Friends star who was married to Brad Pitt, and their relationship fell apart. And she said something I found very interesting. She said, you know what? After something difficult happens in my life, I have a little rule. I give myself 1 day to play victim. And then after that, the next day I wake up and I take responsibility for my part in it. She said, with respect to her relationship with Brad Pitt, even if I only had 1% of a contribution to the failure of that relationship, I need to work on that 1% and take responsibility for my part. You know, blaming others truly is excusing yourself. And every time you blame something else or another circumstance or someone you work with, for example, about your frustration or what's not working in your professional life or in your personal life, you know what I think you're really doing? You're assigning away your power as a human being to that person or that circumstance. Because what you're really saying is for your life to change or for you to feel better, that person must change or that circumstance must change. And that to me is a pretty impotent way to live. I deeply believe that life is a mirror and we get from life not what we want. We really get from life who we are. And I think we get to greatness not only as leaders but as human beings when we stop wishing that things were easier and we commit to being better. I know you know this. All it takes is one match to start a forest fire. Someone told me recently that she used to work in a restaurant, and she told me that when a customer left a small tip, the servers that she worked with would always say, oh, that customer isn't a very good tipper. Not once in the 5 years she worked within that restaurant did she hear the servers say, wow, They left a small tip. I wonder what I did to cause them to do that. It's so easy for us not to assume personal responsibility, to make it about the other people, rather than ask ourselves the fundamentally powerful question, what is my role in this situation? And related to this best practice number one, leadership begins with you, is the whole importance of remembering that the best way to influence another person is to lead by example. One of the best ways to demonstrate leadership is to model the behavior you want to see. The other day I had to get a pair of shoes fixed, so I took it into a local shoe shop. And when I picked it up a few days later, something very interesting happened. The man presented the shoes to me almost like a special gift. It was wrapped in beautiful paper, and he had a big smile on his face. And as a matter of fact, I couldn't help but noticing that his eyes were sparkling, almost like a little kid. It seemed he was so proud of what he had just handed me. I opened up the piece of paper, and I saw the shoes. The heels had been fixed perfectly. They looked almost brand new. The stitching was ideal. The shoes were polished, even though I hadn't asked him to polish the shoes. I looked at him and I said, you know what, you do a great job at what you do. I can't help but telling you that. And he looked at me and he said, you know what, I'm very proud of what I do here at this shoe shop. I almost see myself like an artist. I want to take the shoes that I get and I want to make them into works of art so that my customers feel special. That man's not the owner of the shop. No one was watching him. He just did it because it was the right thing to do. He understood that he could show leadership no matter what his position was. I was in Atlanta a number of months ago to give a speech, and after I was leaving the conference center, a taxi cab drove by and it had a sign, and it was a commercial for an athletic shoe company, and what it said made me think. It said, how hard do you play when no one's watching? In many ways, that's what world-class leadership is all about, playing your best when no one's watching, doing what's right rather than what's easy, reaching for something higher, not because you'll get promoted, but because it's the right thing to do, because it's a demonstration of excellence, because it's allowing you to realize your highest potential. So best practice number one for extraordinary leadership is remembering that no matter who you are, no matter where you work, no matter what your station is within the organization, if you breathe oxygen, and of course you do as a human being, you are a leader. And the best of the best think, feel, and act like leaders. Okay, that brings me to best practice number two. Leaders put people first. In this busy world we live in, with constant change, increased demands from your customers, you being expected to do more with less, that business is all about relationships. Business is all about people. In many ways, business is a conversation. If you lose the conversation with your customers, you'll lose the business. If you lose the conversation with your teammates, you'll lose the organization. And yet so many of us forget that. We live in a world where we can send a satellite across the world with pinpoint accuracy, and yet we have trouble walking across the street to meet a new neighbor. We have so much on our plates each day. We connect with people through our BlackBerry. We connect with people through email or through voicemail or through text messages. And we've forgotten about the power of human connection. And yet business really is about relationships, building high trust relationships, building bonds with people, breaking bread with them, laughing with them, getting to know them as human beings. Here's the big idea. Before someone will lend you a hand, you need to touch their heart. One of our long-term coaching clients is an organization called Omni Healthcare. They're leaders in the long-term care sector. And the CEO of that organization is Fraser Wilson, not only a visionary leader in his own right, but a good friend of mine. And he said something to me the other day over dinner that I'll never forget. He said, Robin, I think the key to our success is that by doing good for our people, they in turn have done good by our customers. And I think it's so true. When you treat your team with respect, and you develop them, and you create a culture where it's safe to be human again, a culture where people are celebrated, a culture where people feel proud about the work they do, a culture where people can grow and fail and evolve as people, your teammates will in turn go out and wow your customers. And it's so easy to forget this. I'll be at a seminar and people will come up to me afterwards and they'll actually ask me, Robin, does this work? Does developing people really work? Does celebrating people and creating that kind of a culture really have an impact? Does championing people and being kind really work? Of course it does. One of my favorite books on team building is Sacred Hoops, written by the former coach of the Chicago Bulls. And he was the coach when people like Michael Jordan, one of the world's greatest basketball stars, was playing for the team. And Phil Jackson, the author of the book, used a metaphor that really resonated with me. He said, you know, a great leader is like the sun. He or she gives everything away to the team, gives their best for the team. And because the sun gives everything away, the plants grow directly towards the sun. And similarly, a great leader of people, no matter what your title is, even if you're right on the front line, even if you're a street sweeper, when you give of yourself and you celebrate people and you build relationships, people grow towards you. It's just human nature. You know, we're all members of the same tribe when you strip away all the formalities. Psychologists have found that human beings have the same human hungers. We have a need for belonging. We have a need for community. We have a need for human connections. And ultimately, every single human being on the planet today has a need to be loved and to be made to feel special. It's almost as if we have an imaginary button on our lapel that says, make me feel important. So of course, treating people well makes a difference. I had a conversation with a man named John Abley, who started a company called Boston Scientific. It's a multi-billion dollar company right now. I asked him one night over dinner, I said, John, what was the single best thing you did to grow your company to greatness? And he looked at me and he said, Robin, I believe that you get what you celebrate. And when you celebrate people, they respond in kind. And when you recognize people doing the kinds of things that you want to see them doing, keep on championing them, because the behavior that gets rewarded is the behavior that gets repeated. And by the way, on this point about culture, I think culture is a world-class organization's secret weapon. You look at a company like Nike or Dell or Apple, and what makes them special is their culture. People can copy their products and their services, but your competitors will never be able to copy your culture. And what is culture? Well, it's those rules of behavior that all teammates need to follow in order to be a part of the organization, in order to fit in, really. And great leaders work on their culture. They make it special. They make it a culture where people are celebrated. They make it a culture where the standards are world class. They make it a culture where ethics are important. They make it a culture where people are honored. So best practice number two really is about putting people first. Yes, I know sometimes it might be hard to connect with a customer or with a coworker. They might appear to be cold, but that's just because they have their social mask up. And behind that social mask and behind that coldness, I truly believe, having worked with so many thousands of people, is an emotion called fear. A lot of people put up this cold exterior and pretend that they're something that they're not because they have a fear of being themselves. They have a fear of being judged. They have a fear of being rejected. They have a fear of not being liked. It's almost as if, metaphorically speaking, most people drive to work every day and they roll down about 2 inches of their car window. And that's about how much of themselves they let into work every day. And you know what the funny thing is? They go home to be human. If you were to see them at home with their kids or with their husband or their wives or boyfriends or girlfriends, significant others, they'd be laughing and they'd be real. But far too many people think that to be a leader at work, again, no matter what your title or role is within the organization, they think in order to show leadership, they need to talk in a certain way. They need to behave in a way that looks strong and powerful. They need to talk like this. They need to command people. And yet the ironic thing is, you connect more with your teammates when you're real. You connect more with your customers when you're a human being. One of our corporate clients is 1-800-GOT-JUNK, North America's number one junk removal service, a company that's growing very quickly and that's led by another visionary leader named Brian Scudamore, who I've gotten to know over the past few months. And as I'm doing my research for our engagement with this organization, I'm interviewing some of the frontline employees. I had a conversation with one of them today, and he talked about the man that he works for, one of the franchise owners. And I said, what makes this man such a great leader? Because this frontline employee was speaking about the person he worked for in glowing terms. And he told me, he said, you know what? I guess what makes this person special is he can relate to me. Sometimes he's very firm, but I respect him because he can communicate his message in a way that makes me feel important. He doesn't talk down to me like so many of the people I used to work for. I know he's my boss. Everyone within our branch knows he's the boss. But I guess what really makes him special, what really makes him a great leader, is that he makes me feel like we work together. He listens to what I say. He doesn't make me feel like I work for him. He makes me feel like I'm a part of the team. And then he told me, what really makes him inspirational is that he's a really good human being, and he's really real. That's such a powerful thought. Your team wants you to be real. When you take down your social mask and let more of your humanity into your relationships at work as well as at home, you give permission to the people you work with to take down their social masks and be more human with you. And this is so incredibly important. When you have two people or a team where they take down the social masks and they're real with each other, this almost magical quality enters into the team and is called chemistry. And you see it with sports teams. They don't talk to each other like this. Oh, that was a wonderful play you just made. Fantastic. We'll have to have a strategy meeting to dissect the performance. No, when someone on a sports team, a world-class or a championship sports team, scores a goal or makes the big shot, there's chemistry between the teammates. They're celebrating. They're high-fiving. And those human connections are what makes them great. So let me give you 5 practical insights to develop world-class relationships. First of all, be authentic. Be yourself. Someone once said to me, Robin, when you're vulnerable, people fall in love with you. Think about that. That's such a big idea. When you show who you truly are, when you laugh with your team, when you're more of yourself with your team, when you celebrate with your team, because remember what John Abley said, you get more of what you celebrate. Your team will love you for it. And be real. We can't connect with someone who isn't real. Before my presentation for Herbalife, I flew to Los Angeles to meet with Michael O. Johnson. Michael O. Johnson used to be the head of Walt Disney International, and he's now the CEO of this organization, Herbalife. And I think he's one of the most effective leaders that I've met in a long time. I made this trip to Los Angeles. I walked into Michael Johnson's office. We sat down in his office. He looked at me in the eyes, and then he said, "Robin, I know how busy you are, and I want to thank you for being here today. I just wanted to look into your eyes and see if you were for real. I wanted to get a sense of who you are as a human being before we did business together." Your customers, your teammates, want to get a sense of who you are before they give their best to you. And I know it's a cliche, and I know you've heard this before, but it really is true. Before someone will help you, you need to help them. Before someone will help you get to your dream and your goal and your objectives, you need to reach out to them first. The best leaders are great human beings, and they're not afraid to show their humanity. The best leaders, in many ways, hold their heart in their hand. Their teammates know they care about them. Their teammates know they have their best interests in mind. And you know what? It's not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength to be real. It takes a lot of courage to show up that way. Anyone can go to work every day and pretend that they're strong and powerful and have all the answers. What takes courage is to take down that social mask and say to your team, "You know what? I might not know all the answers. Or I'm feeling a little bit afraid about the changes we're going through as an organization. Or I'm just as confused about the changes we're experiencing as you are. But guess what? Together, we're going to get to that goal." Because ultimately, great leaders are inspirational. I gave a presentation a while ago to a large organization in the fitness field. The audience members were fitness professionals. And after the presentation, a woman came up to me and gave me one of the best compliments I've ever had. She said, "Robin, thank you so much for your words. You just made me want to be a better human being. And I'm certainly not perfect, and I'm certainly no guru, but that was one of the kindest things that someone said to me after a presentation." And to me, that's what leaders do. Leaders go to work every day, and by their example, and by their behavior, and by their standards, they inspire their teammates to be better human beings, to reach for something higher, and to present their personal greatness at work each day. The second practical insight, MTP, meet the people. Business is about relationships. Get out from behind your computer and talk to people. Have conversations. If you're a salesperson, remember the importance of belly-to-belly selling. Break bread with your customers. Remember their birthdays. Build relationships with them. One of the best things you can do is ask them about their children in a genuine way. Remember their children's names. Remember the little things. I call it OAD, obsessive attention to detail. Here's a quick example. How many times do you receive a handwritten thank you note from someone you've given business to? It doesn't happen often, so it's a great competitive advantage. MTP, connect with people. The third practical insight, say please and thank you. That seems so simple. Management guru Peter Drucker said, "Good manners are the lubricant of an organization." To me, please says I respect you, and thank you says I appreciate you. According to Gallup, the number one reason an employee leaves an organization is not because they weren't making enough money. It's because they did not feel appreciated. So you want to be appreciating your coworkers. You want to be appreciating your team. You want to be praising them. And praise is free. You know why I think so many people don't praise other people? It's because they don't feel good about themselves. It takes a lot of inner power to say to someone, "You know what? You did an amazing job." Here's the big idea. Before you can make someone else feel good about themselves, you need to feel good about yourself. So say please and thank you. Be good. My challenge to you is to become the kindest person you know. And watch what happens to the quality not only of your professional relationships at work, with your teammates, with your customers, with your suppliers. Watch what happens to the quality of your personal relationships, with your family, with your friends, with the people in your community. Be good, because good things happen to good people. I was doing some work a little while ago with an organization called Rogers Communications. They're a world-class enterprise. And after a leadership presentation I gave, a woman came up to me. And she said, "Robin, I've read all your books. I love your message. But I got to tell you, there's someone in my life who actually lived your words." And I said, "Who is that?" And she paused, and then she looked at me, and there was sadness in her eyes. And she said, "Well, that man was my dad." And she said, "My father passed away a number of months ago. 5,000 people showed up at his funeral." She said, "The whole community showed up to honor my dad." And I looked at her, and I said, "5,000 people, was your father a politician?" And she said, "No." And I said, "Was your father a well-known business person?" And she said, "No." And then I asked, well, was your dad some kind of celebrity? And she said, no. And I said, well, then why would 5,000 people show up at your father's funeral? And this woman looked at me and she said, Robin, because my father was good. She said, my father was the person who always had impeccable manners. She said, my father was the first person to wear a smile. She said, my father was the first person to do a kind deed for another person. She said, my father was just one of those people who had this ability to make the person he was talking to feel incredibly special. Often we try to make leadership sexy and complicated, but it's not. Leadership is all about the fundamentals. And this is another powerful thought that I offer to you. Success is all about consistency around the fundamentals. The people who are living extraordinary lives and the organizations that are world-class are not really engaging in all these complicated strategies. When I go into the C-suite of some of the greatest organizations in the world, and I talk to some of the most effective business leaders, and ask, how have you done what you've done? How have you created this world-class culture? How have you created this world-class team? How have you built this extraordinary business that's having such an impact and that has such a great reputation? They look at me and they say the things that seem to be so obvious. I treat people well. We deliver great value for our customers. We're flawless around execution. I'm a disciplined executive. I work hard. I come up with good ideas. You see, success really is about consistency around the fundamentals. And one of those fundamentals is to respect people and to put people first. The fourth practical idea, under-promise and over-deliver. It's a great organizing principle. In other words, don't promise you're going to do something until you're certain you can do it. And even more importantly, under-promise and then over-deliver. It'll build a tremendous amount of credibility in the eyes of your teammates as well as your customers. And credibility builds trust, and trust is everything. And then the fifth practical insight is to simply see yourself as a merchant of wow. I believe in today's economy, the competition is not for people's money or for what I often hear from clients as share of wallet. I think the true competition is not for share of wallet. It's not for more dollars from your clients. Ultimately, I think the competition in today's marketplace is for people's emotions and a share of their hearts. And you might say, Robin, that sounds kind of cheesy or soft. I think it's incredibly true. When you connect with your customers at an emotional level, you will get their loyalty because people buy from their emotions. A lot of industries are experiencing commoditization where their products and services are being copied by their competitors. And so what a lot of customers are starting to do is they're simply buying by price. They buy the cheapest. To get loyalty, to get lifetime customers, to create raving fans, the key is now, more than any other time in the history of business, to connect with people at an emotional level, to connect with your customers at a visceral level. And how do you do that? You connect with them as human beings. My parents will drive 500 miles to do business with the same car dealer that they've done business with for years because he treats them like royalty, because he remembers their children's names, because he's become their friend. I drive across the whole city to see my dentist. He used to be my next-door neighbor. We've developed a human bond. He asks about my kids. He makes me laugh. We've broken bread together. So to be a merchant of wow, go the extra mile by building extraordinary relationships and connecting with people at an emotional level.
This concludes disc number one of Extraordinary Leadership. The program continues on disc number two.
World-class leaders have a bias towards action. When I was a lawyer, I remember receiving a performance review from the lawyer who supervised me, and it's always stayed with me what he wrote. He noted, Robin is a man of action. What I've observed as one of the primary traits of greatness in the leaders that I've coached, many of whom are captains of industry, at the top of their game as entrepreneurs, or recognized internationally as exceptional business people, they have a bias towards action. They are simply people that get things done. And here's a big idea for you. What makes a great leader great is simply this. He or she doesn't do what's easy. He or she does what's right. It's not easy getting up at 5 o'clock every morning to work on yourself or to review your plans or to envision yourself playing your best game as a human being, but it's the right thing to do. So leaders do it. It's not easy to take the time to coach an employee or to build a better relationship with a coworker or improve your communication skills, but it's the right thing to do. So leaders do it. It's not easy to deal with a difficult customer with grace or to embrace change and see that it's an opportunity and simply a reflection of your organization getting to a better place, but it's the right thing to do. So leaders do it. It's not easy to always speak your truth and to communicate clearly and to come from a place of the highest of integrity, but it's the right thing to do. And even if other people aren't doing it, leaders do it. And it's not easy to always be giving credit to the people around you rather than trying to get it for yourself. And yet it's definitely the right thing to do. It's one of the secrets to a high-performance team. So leaders, do it. Again, leadership is not about doing what's easy each day. It's about doing what's right. And you know, a lot of times you're going to make a decision as a leader, people won't like it. People will question you. And what I'd offer to you on that point is simply this. Part of the job of being a leader sometimes involves being unpopular. It makes me think of what my friend Nido Cubain, a great speaker, once said. The price of discipline is always less than the pain of regret. I'm going to say that again for you because it's such a key point. The price of discipline is always less than the pain of regret. I'd rather be disciplined right now. And yes, it's not always easy, but I'd rather reach into myself and be disciplined and get up early and hold myself to a world-class standard and articulate my goals and live my days with a rare sense of passion and focus and joy and celebrate people and take the time to nurture my mind and develop my character than get to the end of my life and be laying on my deathbed and ask myself, what could I have been? What could I have done? And why didn't I do it? I don't think anything so breaks the human heart than getting to the end and realizing you've only used a small fraction of the potential that you had. Let me give you some specific ideas and tactics to integrate best practice number 3, a bias towards action, into your leadership as well as into your life. First of all, nothing fails like success. One of our corporate clients is Banco Popular. They're Puerto Rico's #1 bank and a highly respected organization throughout the Caribbean, through South America, and in the United States. Richard Carrion is the CEO, and he's an extraordinary person. Richard's become a much valued friend, and over dinner one night, he said something to me I found very interesting. He said, Robin, nothing fails like success. And then he explained that concept or that insight to me, and here's what he told me. He said, an organization is most vulnerable when it's most successful. And when you think about it, that is such a core point. When does inefficiency creep into an organization? When does complacency set in? When an organization becomes really successful. Success can breed arrogance. Success can breed apathy. When an organization, whether it's a restaurant or a manufacturing organization or an IT firm, when it gets really successful, it's so easy to fall in love with yourselves. It's so easy to forget about your customer. It's so easy to lose that hunger that you had when you first started off. I was in Tel Aviv a little while ago doing some leadership work with the management team of Nike Israel. And so we went out to dinner that night, and we went to a restaurant that was very, very popular. And as I sat in that restaurant and observed the servers and observed the way they were treating people and observed the whole energy of the place, I realized, you know what? This restaurant is on the beginning of the end. I just imagined when this restaurant was new, the owner greeting the patrons at the front door with a big smile. I imagined the servers being humble and gracious and treating each customer with great respect and making them feel so special. And now I observe them, at the height of their popularity, taking their customers for granted, thinking that their success would last without them having to go the extra mile. It is so true. Nothing fails like success. So if you are a part of a very successful organization, remember what Andy Grove, the head of Intel, once said, "Only the paranoid survive." The takeaway from that line is simply this, stay hungry. Commit yourself to 2 key words, continuous improvement. Love your customers. Always be reinventing yourself. Always be reaching for the stars. And always be leading. And again, if you are a human being, you're a leader. It doesn't matter if you're on the front line, whether you're a manager, whether you're a director, whether you work in a call center, whether you're a server in a restaurant, whether you're a CEO or a managing director, within an organization, within a community, within a family, we all need to show leadership. Second insight for you. In order to show a bias towards action, do the uncomfortable first thing in the morning. In other words, run towards what you are most resisting and tackle that first. That will give you a great sense of energy and a feeling of accomplishment. It'll also promote your self-confidence so that the remaining tasks in the day get done with ease. And along with that point, keep on taking risks. I truly believe in life that the greatest risk is not taking risks. And yet so many of us structure our lives in a way to avoid running towards our fears, in a way to avoid doing the things that make us feel uncomfortable. And yet on the other side of that discomfort is our greatest growth. Let me put it this way for you. The place where your greatest fears live is also the place where your greatest growth lies. Your fears are really your growth coming to get you. That's why so many times when I go into an organization to do a leadership workshop or to give a presentation, I encourage people to remember that there's great power in embracing change. Change is progress. To embrace change not only gets your organization to the next level, but it helps you grow and evolve as a human being. And I think ultimately the purpose of life is to grow and evolve. I think we're really on schoolhouse earth, and life is all about learning. When I think about risk-taking, I think about a client of mine that I've coached in the UK. He's the CEO of a well-known organization, and one of the perks that he enjoys are some of the best tickets at a stadium to watch football games. He told me about something interesting that he does from time to time. He gets his friends and his clients that he's bringing to this game, and they've got these amazing box seats at the stadium. And so he'll take out his season's tickets, and he'll hand them to his friends and to his clients, and he'll say, "Here, hold on to these. I'm leaving." And they'll say, "Where are you going?" He says, "Well, I'm just leaving the stadium." And then they look at him, and they say, "Well, why are you doing that? You're going to need your ticket to get back in." And then he smiles, and he looks at him, and he says, "No, I want to try to get back in without these tickets, without these passes." And they start to laugh, and they say, "Why? Why would you possibly do that?" And the CEO looks at him, and here's what he says: "I want to try to get back in just using my ingenuity, just using my wits, just using my creativity." And they say, "Why?" And he looks at them, and he replies, "Because it keeps me sharp." When you're on your deathbed, what will fill your heart with the greatest regret will not be all the risks that you took. I invite you to consider that when you're on your deathbed, what will fill your heart with the greatest regret will be all the risks you didn't take, and all the fears you didn't face, and all the opportunities you didn't seize, and all the friendships you didn't make, and all the sunrises you didn't watch, and all the books you didn't read, and all the travels you didn't take, and all the things you did not do. Take risks, do the uncomfortable, run towards your resistances, and embrace change. In my mind, the only failure in life is the failure to try. The third insight on this concept of having a bias towards action or being flawless in terms of your execution to show extraordinary leadership is simply this: small daily acts of greatness. This is a philosophy that has helped so many of our clients become far more effective as leaders. You see, a great life truly comes down to what you do each day. And the most successful people, along with the most successful organizations, they don't worry so much about making wholesale or giant changes each week or each month. What they understand is that to get to world class or true greatness as a human being or as a leader, it's all about those small, daily, consistent steps. I call them the 1% wins. And I think this is a powerful thought for you. If you were to improve your relationships at work, let's say, only 1% each day for the next 30 days, after 1 month, how much of an improvement would you experience? And the obvious answer is 30%. If you were to improve your health only 1% each day for the next 30 days, after 1 month, how much of an improvement would you see? You'd see a 30% improvement. If you were to improve your knowledge and your skills for what you do in terms of your work each day, only 1%, after 1 month, you would see a 30% improvement. If you were to become more creative and more innovative in your job, only 1% each day, after 1 month, you'd experience a 30% improvement. You see, what I've realized having worked with so many different people is that most human beings do not want to change. They cling to the safe harbor of the known. They don't want to do anything that stretches them. And so most people will not try something new, whether it is improving their health or improving their productivity or embracing a new technology at work, but they will not do that because it seems like such a big change. When you realize that to get to your best as a human being and help your organization get to the extraordinary, all it requires is a 1% improvement each and every day, it's much easier to make changes. You see, the horse that wins the grand prize only beats the second place horse by a nose. It's known as the slight edge principle. The most successful people in the world are no smarter than the also-rans. They're no better than the also-rans. They just consistently focus step by step, 1% each day in improving their core areas. But over time, those 1% improvements stack one on top of another, so that after 1 year, they're 365% ahead of the competition. After 5 years, they're so much ahead of the other people in their market space. Please remember on this point, every dream starts off small. The marathon runner started with that single step or that single walk around the block. Walmart, the world's largest company, close to $270 billion in sales each and every year, started off with that single store run by Sam Walton. U2, as I mentioned, one of the world's most popular rock bands, started off as unknowns in front of a handful of people in a smoky club one night. Mahatma Gandhi, one of the greatest leaders in the history of the world, started off with that single step and that single choice and that single decision. You see, you make one decision and you set a cause into motion that could take your life into a whole new direction. I think of Richard Branson, one of the great entrepreneurs on the planet today. the head of the Virgin Empire. He started off, first of all, as an editor of a small college newspaper, and then he opened up his first record store. And look at him now. People put him on a pedestal and say he's a remarkable human being. There's something special about him. And yet, he's an ordinary human being. We're all flesh and bones. We all have similar potential. What separates the best from the rest is they take action around their dreams. And what separates the great ones is simply they never leave the sight of a new idea without taking some action to advance that idea. The final insight on this third best practice is simply this. See failure as research. Failure is the price of ambition. We get so hung up on failure at times. We say, okay, I guess I'm not supposed to be doing this, or I'm doing it the wrong way. Failure is simply a part of the process of succeeding. The most successful people in the world have failed more than the ordinary person. The most successful organizations in the world have failed more than their competitors. Failure is necessary. It helps you grow. It helps you learn. It's simply the highway to success. And let me challenge you a little bit. If you're not failing at least once every 7 days, I believe you're not stretching yourself enough and you're not taking enough risks and you're truly not reaching for your highest and your best. I fail far more than most people. I think that's because I try to push my personal frontier so much and because I hold myself to a standard far higher than anyone could ever expect of me. Let me put it this way for you. If you're not experiencing a lot of setbacks in your life, I invite you to consider that maybe you're not growing a lot in your life. And maybe you're not stretching enough in your life. So take some action today and start off small, whether it's building that relationship at work, whether it's making that first decision to stand for excellence with your coworkers, whether it's putting a smile on your face and going the extra mile with a customer, whether it's picking up the phone and calling up the gym so you can start exercising on a consistent basis, or whether it's getting home tonight and telling your family members how much you love them. Because at the end of the day, another one of the things we most regret when we get to the end of our lives is the love we haven't given. I don't know of anyone who gets to the end of their lives and says, I think I was too kind to people, and I think I gave too much love, and I think I hugged my children too much. No, what too many of us do when we get to the end of our lives is we regret the love we didn't give, and the words we didn't speak, and the truth we did not tell. You know, I've been reading obituaries a lot these days. I guess I'm connecting to my mortality more than ever. And actually, that's not a depressing thing to think about. I think connecting to your mortality and the fact that life is short, the fact that at the end of the day, none of us are really here all that long, I think it's something inspirational. I think it breathes life into your days. I think it energizes you. And as I read these obituaries, I've got to tell you, I have yet to read one that says, he died peacefully in his sleep, surrounded by his golf partner, his accountant, and his stockbroker. Just last night, I read an obituary, and it said the same thing that most of them say. He died surrounded by his family and the people he loved. Okay, let's get into the fourth best practice for extraordinary leadership, and that's self-leadership. So often we forget that organizational leadership begins with human leadership. You can't lead a team if you don't lead yourself. You truly cannot elevate and champion another person until you do the inner work required to be elevating and championing and celebrating yourself. Let me ask you a question. Can you really do good on the job if you don't feel good? And can you really celebrate another person if you don't feel good about yourself? And can you really be a source of energy and passion in front of your team and in front of your customers each day at work if you don't have any energy and you lack passion? So organizational leadership really begins with self-leadership. And it surprises me how many executives still don't get this point. They say, Robin, when you come in to do your presentation or to deliver your leadership workshop, can you focus on innovation? And can you focus on strategy? And can you focus on high-performance team building? And can you help us build our culture? And I say, absolutely. I'm going to talk about all those things. But if I may, I'm also going to help people become extraordinary human beings. And if I may, I'm also going to help them get the best out of themselves. Because ultimately, who executes a flawless organizational strategy? People. And who builds a world-class culture where people are celebrated and there's excitement and there's personal responsibility? People. And who builds market share and helps you get great customer satisfaction? It's people. If the people within an organization feel good and they feel a sense of belonging and they feel respected and they're proud to come to work each day, they're going to give their best. People need to come first. And when you care for your people, they truly will care for your clients. In The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, there's a story of a father who was reading a newspaper one night. And his little boy, probably the same age as my little boy, was pestering him. He said, Dad, let's play, let's have some fun. And the father, unfortunately, didn't have any time to play with his son. You neglected the fact that we only have a little window of opportunity with our children. And when that window of opportunity closes, it's really hard to open it up again. And so he kept on reading his newspaper. And then he got an idea. He noticed there was a picture of a globe in that newspaper, so he tore it out and he ripped it into many tiny shreds. And he handed it to his son. And he said, "Here, son, go put this back together," thinking it would take his son quite a while to do it. But children do come to us more highly evolved than adults to teach us the lessons we need to learn. And after only a minute, the little boy came back, and the globe was perfectly back together. And the father couldn't believe it. He said, "Son, how did you do that?" The little boy looked up at his dad, and he said, "Daddy, on the other side of the globe, there was a picture of a person. And Daddy, once I got the person together, the world was okay." The point of wisdom is simply this. If you get yourself together, and you encourage your teammates to get themselves together, and become extraordinary human beings, the organization will be okay. And that's a mistake I made in my own life. I really was living my life from the outside in rather than from the inside out. I thought that if I got a better car or a bigger title or more money in my bank account or a better office, I'd wake up feeling happy. And what I've learned through my own suffering and difficulties in my own life is that nothing on the outside will ever make you feel good on the inside until you begin to work on yourself. Every single one of us as a human being has these holes within us. Their fears, their insecurities, their false assumptions, their limiting beliefs. None of those holes can be filled by anything external or by anything material. Those holes need to be filled by you. Let me give you some practical tips for self-leadership and becoming an extraordinary human being. Number one, commit yourself to lifelong learning. Another one of the primary traits of greatness that I've observed in my coaching clients and within the organizations that I've worked with. And again, these include Microsoft and Nike and FedEx and IBM and the American Red Cross, is this. The best of the best devote themselves to continuous learning. I had the privilege a little while ago to have a one-on-one conversation with Shimon Peres, the former Israeli Prime Minister and a Nobel Prize winner. And one of the things I found remarkable about this man was his love of learning. I met him when he was 82 years old, and he was telling me about the books he was reading. He was telling me about his love of nanotechnology. He was sharing his passion for new ideas with me. And his brilliance began to rub off on me. And I asked him, I said, "Mr. Peres, when do you read?" He said, "Robin, when don't I read? I read as much as I can each day. And on the weekend, I read for most of the weekend." And then he smiled at me and he said, "You know what? If you eat 3 meals a day, you'll be fed. But if you read 3 times a day, you'll be wise." So commit yourself to learning. I challenge you. Don't go to sleep each night unless you've read for 30 minutes during your day. Because what is reading? Reading is nothing more than having a conversation with the author. Imagine having a conversation with Nelson Mandela tonight, and then Richard Branson the night after that, and then Bill Gates the night after that, and then Mother Teresa the night after that, and then Lance Armstrong the night after that, and then Bono the night after that, and then Helen Keller the night after that. Reading elevates you. Reading will inspire you. Reading will give you those big ideas so you can go out into the world and stand for something higher. When I was growing up, my father said to me, "Robin, never let me hear you complaining about going out and buying a new book." He said, "Son, you cut back on your rent, you cut back on your meals if you have to, but each day you read." And I said, "Dad, why?" And he said, "Son, because one idea in one book has the potential to take your life in a whole new direction." He said, "Robin, you just don't know which book that one idea is waiting for you within." If I may, I'd like to tell you about a very powerful resource we have that will help you take your career as well as your life to a whole new level. It's called the Monthly Coach, and it's helped so many of our clients get to world class. Here's how it works if you're not already a member. Every 30 days, I record a new audio learning program on a subject relating to leadership or personal success or individual greatness. Recent issues have included Manage Your Time, Master Your Life, The Energy Explosion, A Simple Formula for Extraordinary Relationships, and The Cure for Fear. And then after I've recorded this program, we upload it to our website at robincharma.com. And then we send participants a quick email saying the latest issue is up. And then you can download it. You can listen to it right off your PC. You can burn it onto a CD so that you listen to it in the car while you're driving to work or coming home. Or you can put it on your iPod and listen to it at the gym or while you're buying groceries. It's a relatively inexpensive service that will give you consistent learning and inspiration and big ideas. And I'm sure you'll agree with me that spending time in learning or reading books or listening to CDs or going to workshops or engaging in something like the Monthly Coach is not an expense. It's really an investment. Because if you get even one idea, it could be the idea that will take your career and your life to a place you've never imagined it could get to. To sign up for the monthly coach, just go to robinsharma.com. And if you haven't been to robinsharma.com in a while, I invite you to visit today. You'll see my daily blog with insights and ideas on personal and professional leadership. You'll be able to download podcasts for free that will help you become far more successful at home as well as at work. There's hundreds of inspirational quotes, and there's all sorts of resources and learning tools, along with information on our next Awakening Best Self Weekend, the Elite Performer Series, and our training and coaching programs such as Grow the Leader, or our one-year leadership coaching program, Extraordinary Impact Leadership Coaching. The next tactic I want to offer you for self-leadership is a simple one, yet it's powerful. Join the 5 o'clock club and take a holy hour. Here's what I mean by that. Early risers are leaders. Getting up at 5 o'clock every day will be difficult for a couple of weeks, and then it'll be one of the most brilliant moves you make in your life. Trust me on this. Getting up early will give you a competitive advantage. Getting up early will make you feel better about yourself. It's a paradox. Getting up early will actually ultimately energize you and get you excited about life. And then once you get up early, I invite you to take a holy hour, 60 minutes for yourself. When you get on an airplane, the first thing the flight attendant says, or one of the first things the flight attendant will say, is that in the event of an emergency, oxygen masks will come down from the ceiling. Put the oxygen mask on your mouth before you help anyone else. And that's such a key point. If you don't take care of yourself, if you're not feeling full of energy, if you don't have passion, if you're not happy, how can you go to work and shine brightly? How can you be great at home? And yet so many people tell me when I coach them or work with them, they say, Robin, you're absolutely right. I don't take any time for myself. I don't take the time to exercise. I don't take the time to read anymore. I used to love playing piano. I don't do that anymore. I spend no time in silence, and I spend no time thinking. Take that holy hour for yourself. Take that time to nourish your mind, your body, your emotions, and your spirit. Then watch what happens to the results in your life. The third tactic for self-leadership, care for your health. Health is definitely one of those things that we take for granted until we lose it. And then if you do lose it, you'll spend 24/7, all of your waking time, trying to get it back. I want to offer you one of the biggest ideas I can share with you. There's nothing more important than your health. Saying that you're too busy working to care for your health and to go to the gym is a lot like saying you're too busy driving to stop for gas. Eventually, it will catch up with you. As I say in my book, Leadership Wisdom from the Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, those who don't make time for exercise must eventually make time for illness. It makes no sense to me to be successful in business and to be sick. And it makes me think of that wonderful Hebrew saying, when we are young, we are willing to sacrifice all of our health for wealth. And yet when we get old and figure out what life is all about, we would sacrifice every penny of our wealth for one good day of health. You do not want to be the richest person in the graveyard. And the payoff is simply this for you. When you get into world-class health, you'll actually be more effective at work. You'll actually have better ideas. You'll have more energy. You'll look better. You'll be happier. You'll have more confidence. You'll have more mental clarity. So put your health first and get into world-class physical condition. Okay, a few more tactics on self-leadership. Keep a journal. It'll help you get to know yourself. It'll help you record your big ideas. Associate with what I call extraordinary minds. In other words, have conversations with people whose lives you want to be living, because I truly believe you do become who you have coffee with. And then finally, connect with your mortality. George Bernard Shaw was asked at the end of his life, what would you do if you could live your life over again? You know what he replied? He said, I'd like to be the person that I could have been, but never was. Connecting to your mortality really is a source of wisdom. It's life-giving. It's energizing. Remember, none of us know when our time is up. Most of us live as if we had all the time in the world. We postpone living. We say, next year I'll be a better leader. Next year I'll give more to my organization. Next year I'll have higher integrity. Next year I'll build better relationships. Next year I'll be more creative. Next year I'll be a developer of people and leave people better than I found them. Or next year I'm going to read the great books out there, or travel, or be a great parent, or get into world-class physical condition. But right now I've got too much on my plate. What I've realized is time waits for no one, and we never know when our last day is going to be. The Eastern philosophers say it so well. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, but the second best time is now. And that brings me to the fifth and final best practice for extraordinary leadership. Leave a footprint and work on your leadership legacy. A while back, a participant at the Elite Performer Series Leadership Workshop said something to me that I'll never forget. He said, Robin, you know, the first 50 years of our lives we spend focused on legitimacy, trying to get people to validate what we've done. Look, Mom, I've achieved success. Or look, neighbor, I'm driving the right car. Or look, coworker, I'm achieving a lot. We try to look good in society. But then, he said, once we get to the halftime point of our lives, whether it's 40 or 50, we begin to go deeper. We begin to become more reflective in our lives. We begin to understand what life's truly about and what's most important. And so we spend the remaining parts of our lives, the last 50 years, building legacy. One of the most important aspects of extraordinary leadership is leaving a legacy. Ultimately, what brings happiness is not what we get from life. I think it's what we give to life. Success is incredibly important. I think if you get to the end of your life and you haven't achieved a lot and you haven't realized your human potential and you haven't been successful, I think it's going to be a hollow victory. But even more important than success is one word, significance. It's having an impact. It's knowing you haven't walked the planet in vain. It's knowing that because you've been here, you've blessed lives, you've developed people, and you have made the world a better place. When I was growing up, my father said something to me that I'll never forget. He said, Robin, when you were born, you cried while the world rejoiced. He said, son, live your life in such a way that when you die, the world cries while you rejoice. Or as one father said to his son on his deathbed, be ashamed to die until you have won a victory for humankind. Work on your legacy. You will get to the extraordinary, and you are a leader because you are a human being. I want to thank you for being with me on this audio learning program. I invite you to visit robincharma.com. Check out the blog. Sign up for the Robin Sharma Report. It's our free monthly newsletter. Visit me at one of our leadership workshops or one of our personal development programs like the Awakening Best Self Weekend. Download the podcasts onto your iPod. You're going to absolutely love them. And check out the other resources that you'll find over there. I want to thank you for your time with me. I hope I've been an instrument of service to you. I hope you listen to this program again and again, and I hope you share it with other people so that one by one, together, we will all do our part to bring greater leadership to our organizations, to our communities, and ultimately to the world. I wish you great moments. I wish you great experiences. I wish you a great life. And most importantly, I wish you great leadership.